listen to your patients and ask that question about the menstrual cycle. What are your periods like? Is that related to your back pain, do you think? You know, just go that one extra question.
Welcome to BowenFest 23 podcast series. Join Chris Reed in conversation with Kathy Bauer. Endometriosis. Can Bowen assist?
Welcome to this podcast in the series of BowenFest 2023. Today we have Kathy Bauer. Kathy, you're a BoTech-trained Bowen therapist and training instructor in New Zealand with a background of over 30 years as a diagnostic medical sonographer, using ultrasound scans daily in a hospital imaging department to aid in the diagnosis of endometriosis and other pelvic conditions. You come to us with a unique perspective of the female and her pelvic pain. Can you begin today by sharing with us some of your work as a sonographer and what you saw in terms of pelvic pain and pelvic conditions in your imaging?
Thank you, Chris. Yes, I can. So most people know that a sonographer is a person who does obstetric scans for babies, and we're all familiar with that, but there's a lot more involved in being a sonographer than just that. So as you've said, for many years, I've worked in women's clinics. I've worked in fertility clinics, gynae clinics, and specifically diagnosing or aiding in the diagnosis of endometriosis with an ultrasound scan. The scans that are done are what we call internal via a vaginal probe, which is a little bit uncomfortable for some people. But one of the problems with the diagnosis of endometriosis by ultrasound is that the endometriosis can be very deep or it can be superficial. So deep endometriosis is easily seen with the ultrasound probe. But unfortunately, the superficial deposits are not well seen with ultrasound. And we're learning new techniques all the time in order to be able to improve our diagnosis of this. But about 80% of people who have endometriosis would not be visualized by the ultrasound probe. So is
ultrasound the best way of diagnosis? What is the best diagnosis at the moment?
Currently, the gold standard, as they call it, is to have a laparoscope and surgery at that point. Yeah, so that's quite a big operation for some people, and it may not necessarily cure the problem immediately. There might have to be further operations and other interventions in order to get on top of the problem. Yeah.
And can you give us an understanding of the prevalence of endometriosis in Australia and perhaps New Zealand? And it would be great to hear a definition, you know, of that endometriosis as a chronic condition, perhaps.
Absolutely. So there are an estimated 1 in 10 people who menstruate, and this is the official definition, people who menstruate in New Zealand, and at least 1 in 9 of those assigned as female at birth in Australia. So those are government health references. In Australia, it's a supported condition for the Disability Employment Services Program, and there's a considerable amount of time lost from work every month. And if you have a supportive employer, well, that's nice, but a lot of people don't have enough sick leave to be able to have days off work continually every month for the you know, a large part of their life. So you can understand it is quite debilitating and has far-reaching consequences, really, in terms of financial relationship and all sorts of issues that are not just about having a period, really.
And I suppose even career affecting as well.
It can be career limiting. It can be relationship limiting, because one of the biggest problems is that people come and are not easily diagnosed. It can take a very long time to get a diagnosis, sometimes up to 8 or 10 years, because symptoms mimic other things. People are very shy about talking about their periods. Doctors are not really sympathetic to bad periods. So it can be, you know, it can raise a whole lot of issues in terms of guilt, of not being able to have, not be able to conceive easily. And that's when most people come to have the diagnosis made, is because they've been trying to have a baby and not been successful. And then we find, 5 or 6 years down the track that this is what's causing it. The problem is that it doesn't happen every month, and the pain and the limitations are not consistent. It doesn't happen in the same way every time a woman or a person who menstruates has a period. So it's very difficult to get a solid diagnosis, as it were.
And what actually is it, Kathy?
What actually is it?
What actually is
endometriosis? So it's a debilitating condition. It's not life-threatening, but as you've said, it's life-changing for a lot of people. So the endometrial tissue, which is the lining of the womb, which is the blood that's shed every month with a period, is implanted outside of the womb, of the uterus. So it's under hormonal control of estrogen mainly, and it bleeds at the same time as a period, but it can't get outside of the abdomen to be disposed of, so it builds up inside. So the tissue, the endometrial lining, it can be adherent to all sorts of structures within inside the abdomen, because the abdomen's a big cavity. It can be adhered to the bowel, it can be adhered to the ovaries, to other tissue, other lining tissue inside the abdomen. And every time you menstruate, that bleeds as well. I've seen it in the umbilicus, or the belly button, if you like, and it's also been noted in people's lips and their nasal cavities too. So it can travel a long way. Well, having said that, it doesn't travel really. The early thinking was that it did come out of the fallopian tubes into the abdomen, but these days the thinking is more towards that it's actually a developmental thing in the embryo when we are becoming the person who menstruates, female if you like. The Müllerian duct development and the tissue gets put down in the wrong place, and so therefore it's not into the lining of the womb, it's just outside. And it behaves in the same way as endometrium does.
As biotherapists, we're aware of fascia. So what type of tissue is it? Is it like a connective tissue, or is it different to that?
It's not connective tissue. It's tissue of its own. It's endometrial tissue.
So specialized cells that react to what hormones?
That's absolutely sort of correct. It does, yeah. Yeah. Mm.
Could I ask, why is it painful?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So you can have really severe deposits but not experience a lot of pain. And it really is because of where the deposits are, I think, in relation to other tissues and nerves possibly.
And are some people more susceptible to be having more painful periods because of other things as well, like perhaps they're mental health or stress, or is that involved?
Okay, so well, there may be a genetic link. They're doing studies on that at the moment through Melbourne Women's Hospital. If your mum or your sister has it, you're probably more likely to get it too.
I know I'm throwing a lot of questions at you here without notice, which is, and I'm just because I'm often. I have these thoughts, and I'm sure some of the other Bowen therapists are sort of wondering the same types of things as we sort of delve into these types of conditions. Can I ask, do we think it's getting worse in society? Is there more of it being diagnosed than perhaps there was in the early in the century, or is it?
It's certainly become more known, I think. With the more we talk about it, the more there are a lot of self-help groups and websites that you can access for information. I think that talking about periods, certainly in my generation and probably my mother's generation, certainly was not a thing that you discussed. And so if you had a bad period, nobody would know about it except for yourself. So I think that it's become much more open. It would be really hard to say if it was being diagnosed more, or if it's just that we've become more open about it, really. It's certainly a large percentage of the population have some of the symptoms and possibly all of them.
And what age does someone present? Is it once they start, once they go through puberty?
Yeah, it can be, so it can start as early as 11 or 12 years of age when a girl first has her menstruation starting, and it carries on until you become menopausal, really. So menopause is a cure for it, but then menopause is not kind and does other things to us. But women of childbearing age, obviously of menstruation age, and there are things that you can, the doctors can help you with. There's hormone replacement therapy. There's being on the pill. There's lots of medical ways to help. Yeah, certainly.
And I suppose even more extreme, perhaps even hysterectomy in the past would have been something that would be, is that something that can help as well in a really
I think that I think they try to avoid hysterectomy if possible, because there's a lot of emotional issues attached to that, as well as hormonal things. Oftentimes would need to go on to hormone replacement therapy, dependent on whether you have one or both ovaries removed with the hysterectomy. It's a very big operation, and it has lots of emotional things attached to it, as I say. Yeah.
Yes, certainly. Yeah. You can avoid something like that. Yeah, you mentioned some of the pain earlier. Can you, some of the symptoms or
absolutely
where
so
people get the pain? Can you talk
pelvic
about that?
Pain? And you know, it will be described as period pain, I suppose. So most people who menstruate would know where that is. It's low in the pelvis. It may be with menstruation, but it could be at any other time of the cycle as well. Lower back pain, again, menstrual cramping, but that's not always every month, as I say. What we call dysmenorrhea, which is heavy and clotty, flooding kind of period. You can get bladder and bowel pain because the deposits can move into the wall of the bladder or into the wall of the bowel. Intercourse might be painful, so there's going to be relationship issues there. And the infertility being the big one, and many people only find out that they have endometriosis when they are having difficulty conceiving. Pregnancy would be one of the things that which would definitely calm the condition, but getting pregnant is very, very difficult with severe disease. And then the chance of having an ectopic pregnancy is significantly increased as well. So we're going to have anxiety, we're going to have depression, we're going to have difficulty breathing because we might have deposits up under our diaphragm as well. It's a very big disease. And as I say, 80% of the population tend to be, have some of those symptoms.
And that's a lot. That's a lot of people.
It is.
That's a lot of the population. That's a lot of the population. So it really is, we may not be as, certainly as male therapists, we're probably not as aware and have that.
Indeed. I think that one of the important things to do is to show some empathy and just try and ask your clients about their menstrual cycle. Just, don't just say, have you got back pain? Yes or no. If they do describe back pain, ask them about it. Does it come with your periods? That sort of thing. Be a lot more open-ended in our questioning, because it may be that we're the one that they open up to. They might not have told anybody else about this, and they've been dealing with their low back pain for many years, and they come to us and they haven't told anybody that it's related to their period. So you don't have to be a diagnostician, but you can just say to them, have you talked to your GP about this? Does your GP know that you're having bad periods? And you can point them in the direction of some websites. In New Zealand, we've got the New Zealand endo.org .nz website. And I know that there are, if you were to Google endometriosis in Australia, you would have a wealth of websites and help organisations that you can access.
Terrific. So, and you said earlier that some people perhaps don't know they've got endometriosis until they're having trouble conceiving.
Yeah.
And so they may have pain, but then not relate it to endometriosis as such. Is that what you're saying? So the people may present with some back pain that may be endometriosis related, but they may just think, I've always had a sore back.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. And if you go to your GP with a sore back, he's probably not going to think about endometriosis first off. He's going to think about physiotherapy. He's going to think about sending you for massage or whatever. So, yeah, this is why it takes such a long time for the diagnosis to be definitive, because, there's all of these symptoms which are obviously attributable to any other issue as well, and bringing them all together is the important thing. Finding a sympathetic GP who takes note of all of these things lining up, because not everything happens all at the same time.
And in your experience, are there some clues or some things that we can ask to sort of, perhaps if we're going to sort of refer the person back to their GP, around how it might present?
Yeah. Definitely ask them about their periods if they say anything about, clotting and flooding and the type of pain that they have, then that's a red flag and should definitely be suggested that they speak to their GP, or have you spoken to your GP about it? We can't refer to a gynecologist, but, you know, the GP's the first start.
Yeah. And is it generally cyclical?
Well, no, it might not be. It might come 1 month really bad, the next month not. But we also need to realize that if we have pain in one place, it may not be that place that's being that the problem is. We have to, you know, recognize referred pain and pain that happens in one place because it's something going on in another. I would encourage my clients to first of all search on Google perhaps, or one of the websites, to, you know, just to see how they fit into those categories. As I say, we can't diagnose, but we can help them to go forward and find somewhere to, you know, to look for these things. But any abnormal menstrual bleeding, which is, you know, at the wrong time or very heavy or sort of out of sequence with your normal period cycle, should definitely be checked by a GP. Absolutely.
Mm. Now, we've talked a fair bit about the medical side, perhaps, but as we are talking to bone therapists in this podcast, and yourself as a bone therapist, what do you see as the role of a bone therapist, and how does your experience sort of inform your practice?
So the one thing that we're going to have if we've got a bad period is we're going to have anxiety, we're going to be leaning towards depression. This happens every month. Why does it happen to me? Why, you know, so Bowen therapy, as we know, is absolutely fantastic for calming those sorts of thoughts and issues down. We have the BRMs, which are perfect. We have the pelvic procedure. We're going to get some tension in our hamstrings and our lumbar area, sacral moves, the psoas particularly, psoas procedure. There's the navel procedure if you've done SBP2, pubic symphysis release. But the big one is the infertility procedure, which involves the coccyx. In doing that procedure, we need to be sure that the woman is not pregnant before we treat her. So we do a pregnancy test before we actually treat the coccyx, because that would be a terrible thing to happen if we were to make a mistake there. Treating both partners is probably paramount in that as well, because they must be sharing these issues with endometriosis or even, you know, with infertility. Certainly coccyx procedure alone without the infertility procedure is also very helpful. There's the colon and gallbladder and additional moves. There's the respiratory procedure, chest procedure, kidney, and if they do have laparoscopy or any surgery, we can use the scar procedure after they've had that for help in reducing that scar tissue. So I think Bowen is a fantastic modality for helping these people. I mean, we're never going to cure it. It's not curable, but we can certainly assist in many, many ways over a long period of time and help people feel to be able to accept this condition and help them through it.
Terrific. So if you give us a good list of procedures that we can consider, depending on how the person presents. You mentioned infertility procedure as against coccyxes. Can you explain, is there a difference between the two?
Well, so you can just include coccyx with your BRM procedures alone, but it's called the assisted conception procedure, and I think it's in module 6, after module 6. So the woman is treated on a weekly basis with the coccyx procedure until regular menstruation is established. So you do the assessment for the sensitivity of the coccyx, and if one side is sensitive, you address that side. If neither side is sensitive, you address the left side. Remember to lock the leg and in move two, and when the patient turns over, make sure that you do the cross on the side that you've locked the leg. Three consecutive sessions. You continue with the pattern until a regular menstrual cycle is established. It's advised that you treat the partner intermittently with whatever procedures are needed to balance his body as well. And once you have regular menstruation, then you can work out how long your cycle is, and you then go on to treat the woman as near as possible to the commencement of her next period with the coccyx procedure. It's important to advise partners that they should refrain from sexual relations until ovulation at mid-cycle, and after which time they can continue normal sexual relations. So then you can treat patients bi-monthly until conception has occurred. So it's not a quick fix, and it may take longer than that to establish, but I think it's worthwhile trying. And I have had two successes with two clients that presented, and they were reluctant to choose IVF, although that was obviously, you know, in their pathway, but they chose to go with me with Bowen, and we were successful. So that's a really happy outcome.
Terrific.
Yeah.
That's great. And I suppose some people perhaps may not necessarily be looking to conceive.
No.
But so would you then perhaps, we could almost call that infertility protocol, as you called it then, almost an endometriosis protocol?
Well, wouldn't that be nice if we could do that? I don't know how. It's meant to regulate your cycle. So yes, and I wonder how we would go about calling it a endometriosis protocol.
Well, we could do it between you and
that's
I, Kathy,
something
we're
to
the
think
only
of,
ones
isn't
listening
it?
At the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll just call it that.
But I wonder. So, because if the cycle does, in your experience, if the menstrual cycle does regulate mm-hmm. and become more, in inverted commas, normal,
acceptable,
would that mean that that'd be a
yeah.
better word? Would that mean that there'd been a change? Can the endometriosis change?
So I don't think so, because if it's developmental in the Müllerian duct part of our development in an embryo at up to eight weeks, those cells are always going to be in the wrong place, and there's always potential for the bleeding to occur randomly at the wrong time, whatever. So I don't think so.
Because I'm just wondering what would cause someone who often had heavy, uncomfortable periods or intermittent or not as regular as perhaps the dates to be as clockwork, if that changed and they were able to become more regular and more acceptable period, I wonder what's changed. Is it hormonal changes? I'm just thinking out loud. Is it a hormonal change that's caused that? Is there a change to the way the cells react? It's interesting, isn't it? If we say that, because if we can bring about that change for someone who's going through, who hasn't, say, perhaps is not menstruating acceptably to become pregnant, you know, all of a sudden, so now they're ovulating well, and because we do see it in practice, I think we could probably all hopefully put our hand up and say, I think we've helped somebody conceive, you know, so that was having a lot of trouble. So I'm just wondering what the physiology is that's happening through that.
Well, we're told to trust the technique, Chris.
We do.
And
that's
so
exactly
we
what
must.
We do. But sometimes I wonder too much. My wife says, I'm going to write, he was a curious man on my headstone.
Well,
so
you know,
in
my
curious.
other work, I'm a scientist, I'm a detective, and my most, you know, the biggest part of my brain is scientific. And so the words trust the technique for me have been a bit foreign, and it's been a real good learning curve for me to do Bowen therapy. And because that's really, I try not to be scientific about Bowen. I try to be esoteric, if you like, and to listen to the other side of people's misery rather than their diagnostic side, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
I agree wholeheartedly. I think it's terrific that we recognize, it's almost like take your ego away.
Step
and
we can't know
everything about how the body works. And even the smarter
scientific
minds in the world
level,
don't know how all
that. That's exactly right.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, we shouldn't know as bone therapists. That's not
right.
That, you know, hopefully we become more and more aware of anatomy, physiology, and pathology. And that's a really good thing. But again, just trusting the technique because we know it works, and you know, and just going with that. And if we do along the way make people better or help them, or you know, we have a nice baby out of that, well and good. You know, that's what. Yeah, it
does.
Doesn't
it really
matter
what caused it,
no,
or is the result what
so.
We're after? Isn't it?
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, that's a nice thought to end on, isn't it?
Well, and just on that, since we are sort of ending, I just want to say thanks so much for sharing your knowledge and wisdom with us today. And sorry about my couple of curly questions
okay.
in there. But is there one message perhaps that you'd like to leave Bowen therapists listening to this conversation today with?
Yeah, listen to your patients. Question them more than just the yes or no. There's so much research going on out there around this issue, and Melbourne Women's Hospital are undertaking so many research projects. There's a new test they're looking at using biomedical markers, so a blood test instead of having to do the interventional looking inside with the scope, which would be an amazing thing if it were to come to fruition. Just listen to your patients and ask that question about the menstrual cycle. What are your periods like? Is that related to your back pain, do you think? You know, yeah, just go that one extra question.
And trust the technique.
Trust the technique. Love it.
Thanks so much, Kathy. It's been wonderful having you with us today.
Thank you so much for your time.
We hope you enjoyed the conversation, but it doesn't end there. In the show notes below, you'll find a link where you can submit your own question, something that has piqued your interest from the conversation, to ask the presenter. This will happen on Thursday, the 19th of October, during BowenFest 23 Live, where all our presenters will be part of a Q&A panel. Put your question forward and have it answered on the night so that we can extend the conversation further, learn more, and connect more deeply. You've been listening to BowenFest 23 podcast series, proudly presented by Bowen Therapy New Zealand and the Bowen Association of Australia.